welcome to Elephate in the Room, Elephate's weekly podcast. I am your host, Derek Caraview, and with me as always is Christian A. Dumay. Hi, Chris.
Hey.
Today's podcast, we have Robert Hansen. He is a veteran in computer security and is known to many in the industry by the handle rSnake. His decades-long career has had an enormous impact on the way we use the internet. Currently, he is the chairman and founder of Outside Intel, which is focused on corporate discovery and business intelligence. And he also works as a consultant with various agencies and industries. And this was a pretty fascinating conversation that we had here. However, Chris, it seems like while I am there the whole time, you were not.
No, I wasn't.
Yeah. Okay. So I think we should give a little warning that, you know, we asked Robert a pretty controversial question. We asked him if a hot dog was a sandwich. And I'm assuming coincidentally, after his answer, you were no longer on the podcast. So
yeah, that's true. I just walked. I couldn't take it.
Well, you know, you have to have your principles, you know. All right. So obviously we had some technical difficulties. Chris is actually in the room, but unfortunately not on the podcast after the very beginning there. But hopefully you guys will be there for the whole thing. Please sit back, relax, and enjoy Robert Hansen. All right.
There we go. You can edit that one out. Huh?
Okay. Robert, welcome to the podcast here. We're pretty excited about this podcast because we Googled your name.
You better clean your computer off now.
So what we need to establish from the beginning here is, are you the FBI agent or the Alaskan serial killer? Because that's going to have a lot to do with the questions that I ask you.
Yes. it's funny. There's a lot of Robert Hansons, and they're all pretty notorious. we got something going. Yeah. No. Occasionally I get invited to conferences, and every once in a while someone's like, "Hey, how'd you get that CIA spy to show up? Isn't he in jail?" No, I am not.
Wrong conference, but I'm still here.
Yeah.
To start, I want to talk maybe a little bit about your handle here. How does somebody get a nickname like rSnake? That's weird. rSnake, yes.
rSnake, oh. Yeah. Yes. If you play enough role-playing games and you have enough nerdy friends, you end up with crazy handles, and mine happened to be Snake. And when I went to college, I had to join the computer science program, and they made us pick handles. And they're like, it has to have your name in it. And I'm like, you have no idea what my middle name is. It could be Snake. So it's Robert Snake. That's what it stands for. 23 years later, it's still there.
Before we really kick things off here, could you maybe explain to our audience who you are and what you do?
Sure. My name is Robert Hansen. I go by rSnake, as we already cleared up. My background is primarily in browser and web application security, a little bit of SEO as well. Basically, I've been breaking the internet for, 20 plus years, going on 23 or 24 years now. So a lot of the vulnerabilities and things that you guys probably know and love and just don't know how to talk about it have probably come from either people I know or my lab directly. I've basically hacked into just about anything you can think of at some point or another, or know the guy who did. Everything from flight control systems and banks, and I have a number of crazy stories about, Iran and North Korea and all kinds of crazy stuff. So pretty eclectic, long career, which sounds like something I'd love talking about, but honestly, I hate talking about myself. So you'll have to dig it out of me.
Fair enough. Okay. So, can you tell us about what was the max headroom thing that nobody knows anything about? Is that you? Can you admit that on my podcast?
I think most of the listeners are probably too young to remember that even. You're dating yourself here.
Oh, that's going to, I'm going to do that all through this podcast. So that's okay. all right. So we're going to go ahead and get started here. Quick question now. You have to sing a song at karaoke. The fate of the world is in your hands with this song. What song do you sing?
Well, if the fate of the world's at stake, I'll probably pick the shortest song possible, so least likely to screw it up. How about that one? Maybe Happy Birthday.
Happy Birthday. All right, what's it?
You know, sung in the Marilyn Monroe style, of course.
Yeah.
You know,
is there any other way? Yeah. Okay, so let's say, do you have a go-to karaoke song? Do you sing karaoke at all?
I do. You know, I'm not that great at karaoke, but... I don't know. I tend to go for like either like kind of old school rock or, you know, something like totally off the wall that sounds like something I would not want to sing, like a Britney Spears or, you know, like a Sia or something, you know, something that's like definitely not in the correct register.
Okay. So then you get the laughs going. Yeah. So I'm not much of a singer myself, but I either go with Johnny Cash's Folsom Prison. Because you don't really have to carry any tunes there, or Neil Diamond's "Sweet Caroline," because then you get people singing along with you. Those are the two I go for.
Oh yeah, I go to Oktoberfest every year, and that is a very popular song amongst the Germans.
Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Is a hot dog a sandwich? I actually have never thought about that. I mean, I guess if you put a hot dog on normal bread, you'd call that a sandwich. And if you put lunch meat inside of a hot dog, you'd call it like a hoagie or something. I don't know what you call that. I guess probably not in the most traditional like sense of the word sandwich, because it's not two pieces of bread and then they're not flat or like cut into like triangle shapes or something. I'm guessing no. I don't think it's... I mean, in the sense that a hoagie is a sandwich, and so yes, it is a sandwich variety, but not in the traditional sense of sandwich, no.
What is your favorite thing that you bought this year?
Oh, I don't know. I'm about to buy a new car, which I think will be my favorite thing, so that will be within this year, but I haven't actually purchased it yet. I'm not really that, I'm not one of those people who tends to like love things that I buy. I'm not like a really materialistic person typically. It's more utilitarian. So I don't really have a particularly good answer for you. I bought an Apple Watch, which I'm kind of enjoying more because it tells me to stand up when I'm using the toilet. And I think that's really hilarious. But, but other than that, I really can't think of anything.
Okay. What is your biggest guilty pleasure?
That I can admit to, you mean?
Yes.
let's see. I mean, I really enjoy going to the pool and kind of just sitting there and relaxing. And that's actually the reason I bought the Apple Watch, is so I could actually like make sure that if someone's trying to get a hold of me, they can. And while I'm in the pool, so I'll take an hour off here and there and go and hang out at the pool. It's kind of fun.
All right. You can add anyone to Mount Rushmore. Who would it be?
I mean, clearly Jar Jar Binks. I mean, if you're just gonna go for the absurdity, I think that would be the most like, because then everyone can universally hate it as opposed to just some people hating it. You know what I mean? There's no one who's gonna go like, oh no, that's actually pretty good. We should keep it there. You know?
Fantastic answer. I like that one. We have to retire the question. All right. If you have a time machine that works once, it will take you there and back home. Do you go to the past or to the future?
Actually, that's a more interesting question. If I can't return, I definitely go to the past. But if I can return, I definitely go to the future. I think that there's a whole lot of unanswered questions that I really would like to know the answer to. And there's, In my world of computer security, I end up having a whole bunch of hypotheses, and they're very hard to prove unless you just wait a long time. And so it would be really fun just to get the answer, set up a whole bunch of tests, play them out, see how they work, and then come back.
All right. So the ability to return means the future, but if you're stuck, then you would go to the past. Okay. That's a, definitely. That's an acceptable answer there. How about a favorite either TV show or movie that you loved as a kid but now cannot stand?
That I can't stand as an adult? Oh, I don't know that I have an answer for you. When I grew up, there was only like two stations. And so like you were sort of stuck with whatever it was. Oh, probably MASH. I loved MASH when I was a kid. I probably would not watch a single episode of MASH now. one of the two stations I had MASH on every like weekday afternoon or something. And so I watched a lot of episodes of MASH during the summer.
my dad was a huge fan of MASH. And so we used to watch that all the time. Not one that I have revisited. The worst for me was revisiting the Super Friends cartoon. Again, up a little bit. That was my favorite as a kid, and I watched it when it was first on, I think, Cartoon Network, maybe 15 years ago now. I was very excited to see it, and then all I could think of was that I must have been the dumbest child ever because it was so horrible. So that one stung just a little bit.
Well, you turned out okay-ish.
Let's hope, yeah. what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be an aeronautical engineer. I wanted to build airplanes, and I really liked the concept of aerodynamics and complex airplane systems in general. I thought they were really, really interesting. And then I realized my eyesight was horrible, so I could never like be a pilot and enjoy anything I built. And then I realized it was like really heavy math, and I'm okay at math, but not like that great at math, and a lot of physics and stuff. And so I was kind of like, you know what? Kind of like computers too, so maybe I'll do that instead. And 20 something plus years, almost 30 years or whatever it's been now, later, I think I made the right choice, because there's not that much business in aerospace, and there's a ton of business
certainly,
in computers.
Yeah. Now, if you weren't working in security, what would you be doing?
I ask myself that all the time, because at some point, I'll probably have that option. And so phase two of my life, what that look like? I think what it'll end up being is angel investing and running my own either hedge fund or angel network. And so I've made a lot of progress towards that ends anyway. So that's probably what I'll end up doing, because I like seeing lots of different projects and helping lots of different companies out. I wouldn't say bored, but I get antsy and want to try new things, and being exposed to a lot of companies is one of the reasons I used to love being a consultant. I'd always see new interesting companies and new interesting technology, and it just really expanded my brain horizon across a bunch of different things I normally wouldn't even think about, kind of forced me to think about it. And so I think being an investor exposes you to a ton of interesting ideas that you can sort of fit those puzzle pieces together in interesting ways that maybe the CEOs of said companies wouldn't normally be able to do themselves, just because they aren't exposed to as many things as I am.
Sure. And obviously being so focused on specifically what it is they're trying to accomplish, it's sometimes hard to take that step back and see what else could be done, what else is out there. So that's always nice to have somebody from that other perspective helping you out.
Yeah. In fact, I was talking with a company just the other day, and they're like a shooting range. And I'm like, you should do this and this other thing, and all this like super high tech stuff, like get these AI teams involved and all this stuff. And I think we're going to get this massive project funded by the state and all kinds of crazy stuff. So it's nothing that he would have ever thought of on his own, but yet, you put the puzzle pieces together, get enough companies in the room, and suddenly it turns into a viable idea.
Sure. Yeah. And it's fun when you can see that person's eyes kind of like, oh yeah, yeah. Now, you can, when they can see it, that's gotta be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the common misconceptions about your work?
Oh, there's tons. So are you talking about with like the like truly common, like the layperson, or within our industry? Because there's pretty big misconceptions even within the industry about how things work.
Well, let's do it this way. Let's split the difference. What's one? Let's say the biggest misconception within the industry.
Yeah, I think a lot of people assume that what they're working on matters, and that is a really weird thing to have to explain to somebody, that their really awesome exploit that they just developed really has no bearing on anything whatsoever. And then, you know, people work on policy and they're like, my policy, blah, 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 matters. Or they'll work with Gartner or IDC and like these companies that are trying to tell you what to purchase or whatever, like that has no bearing whatsoever on anything. And there's all these like major industries and technologies that are effectively either useless, or it's very difficult to prove that they're worth anything, or they're just sort of a little bit of value. But the things that people don't understand that provide like maximum change to our industry are like way out of left field. For instance, insurance. Like the ability for an insurance provider to say, I'll give you a discount on premiums if you do X, Y, and Z, dramatically changes what happens in the boardroom, and therefore the downstream effect is massive change within tons and tons of enterprises across the globe, just to avoid the cost of the premiums. So we're seeing like insurance grew, I forget the number now, but it's like $3 to $4 billion in just a handful of years, which is getting close to the same size as cybersecurity as an entire industry. And it's done that in a fraction of the time. So there's something there, and people just aren't paying attention to it. They think that their little thing that they're working on matters, when in reality it's external forces that are so wildly beyond the scope of anything that they're working on. They just don't understand what's coming. It's like this tidal wave, and it's about to completely swamp everything they're doing, and they just don't even see it. It's really weird.
I do just want to confirm really quickly, though, that this podcast is very important, though, right?
This one is, yeah. most aren't, but this one.
Yeah, this one, the one that I'm working on, is obviously very important,
this one in particular
really matters, yeah. Right? Okay, just so long as that's
correct.
Clear. All right. Yeah. And yeah. What would you say is the lay person's biggest misconception about your work? So the people who just really don't, you know, they know how to turn on a computer, and that's about it.
Well, I think Hollywood has done a big disservice. They think that the kinds of people who are in security who are very good at it are like, you know, these goffed out or punks or, you know, spiky hair or whatever. And, you know, they have chains all over or what, you know, they have this weird perception, and they think we have like 1,000 monitors in our whatever. And I mean, yeah, there are some of those people in their industry, but like, the vast majority of the people who are extremely good are, you know, people you just walk past and you would not notice that, you know, they have a book bag, you know what I mean? Like you wouldn't look at them twice. They just look like some random, you know, guy who works in the office. And yet they're running basically all of the infrastructure of the internet. And kind of with that Hollywood misperception is also a misperception on what it looks like to be vulnerable and what it looks like to hack. And unfortunately, it really doesn't look like much. It's usually just typing stuff into a console or, you know, a little, we have some like, you know, colorful like interfaces to certain things, but basically it's, you know, just, you know, web pages and little programs, and, you know, very often has very little UI elements whatsoever to it. It's not this big dramatic thing where like sound is playing and people are like drumming in the background and lights, and, you know, it's just not like that.
So what you're going to try and tell me now is that typing faster doesn't really help anything?
No, it does. It makes
you things like we're in.
No, you definitely have to say that. Otherwise, okay, you don't get in. Good. Yeah. Actually, there's this guy who has this pinky ring that says fire on it. And every time he hits the enter key, he says fire. I do appreciate that hilariousness, but no, really, it doesn't matter how fast you type. I prefer to type quickly just so I get more information into my computer, but that really doesn't change anything.
Okay. So do you feel that people are generally informed about security and online data, or should we all be terrified?
It depends like very much on what you mean by informed. I think that the general understanding that there is vulnerability and that the internet is not a safe place, generally speaking, I think is fairly widely understood post Snowden. Before that, I would say no, not it was not around the dinner table. And now I think people seem to understand a bit more that it impacts them and it's a real thing. But if you want to ask, do I think that they have any clue how bad it actually is? No, they have absolutely no idea. They don't realize that they're probably already hacked. And not just like by one or two or 10 or 100 people, like they're wildly compromised in just countless ways. And even if they're not, it would be very trivial to compromise them in countless ways. And that's one of those things that's, it's hard to explain, and it starts sounding a lot like, you know, paranoia, and largely a lot of those threat models just don't matter to the average person. Like there was this great research paper Microsoft did a million years ago. There were some problems with it, but it was called So Long and No Thanks for the Externalities, a Rational Rejection of Computer Security, or something along those lines. And basically what it was basically saying is if you spend more than like 5 minutes thinking about security as an average person per day, you're outspending the value or the cost associated with the likelihood of you being compromised. So there's no way to like make up the money you're spending by spending any time at all, assuming your time is valuable in any shape or form to you. And while that is true, it's also completely not true. The problem lies in the fact that we all know each other. If we didn't all know each other, this actually wouldn't be that bad because, you know, me hacking you doesn't really matter to anybody else. But because you, like a lot of people, like, I don't care, I don't have any secrets. Well, that A is not true, but if it was true, you'd hand everybody your wallet. You know what I mean? Those things are secrets. But that's not really what they mean, but it doesn't really matter. It's still incorrect. But the real problem is they have other people's secrets. They know that so-and-so is sleeping with such and such. They know that somebody's in love with so-and-so. They know that somebody cheated on their taxes last year or whatever. They have other people's secrets. And anytime someone says, I don't have secrets, my initial reaction is kind of probably an overreaction, but it's sort of like, wow, maybe I shouldn't trust you because you have apparently never been able to keep a secret. And they're like, well, no, I have other people's secrets. I'm like, great, then you have secrets. So maybe it's imperative that you don't get compromised so that you can protect other people's secrets. And that network thing is actually, the Chinese military has something called Million Grains of Sand. They realized a long time ago that they may not be able to hack, let's say, the general, because the general's, you know, too secure or maybe never goes online or whatever. But they can hack, you know, general's nephew and his grandson and, you know, sister-in-law or whatever. They can hack everybody around the general, and eventually by virtue of hacking everything around the general, you'll have a good enough, clear enough picture about what's going on, that you'll be able to, you know, identify basically anything you want, you know, like, hi, sorry, little Timmy, I'm not going to be able to make it to the baseball game. I'll be back in a couple months. Okay. Well, he's in charge of the 10th fleet. He'll be gone for a couple months. You know, he's being deployed, and generally they're deployed to the Middle East or whatever, right? You can figure it out without having to actually talk to the person. And the reason I know that is because other militaries have broken into China and stolen Million Grains of Sand. So they have, you know, that, you know, is literally in the hands of multiple militaries. So it's not, it's, you know, the average citizen, in pretty much any state, is, assuming you're online at all, has been compromised already.
Okay. Yeah. That seems to be the, I guess what general consensus now that, if it's almost not even worth being scared because it just already happened and trying to figure out ways.
Yeah, I have a massive database that I've been collecting data for years and years. I'm sort of like a privatized version of the military, but not, you know, nothing illegal as opposed to what they are able to do. Mm-hmm. So one of my favorite things is people are like, oh, could you hack me? I'm like, the problem is I already have hacked you. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have to do anything other than look up your data in my existing database. And literally a guy was yesterday, he's like, hey, can you get my old Hotmail password? I lost it like a million years ago. I know you have data. And so I looked at my data. I'm like, what was your email address? Looked it up. I'm like, no, but I have your password for this other thing and this other thing and this other thing. He's like, holy crap. like I knew you had my password, but I didn't know you had that many passwords. I'm like, and that was for some ancient account that he doesn't even use, you know? Right. So imagine what I have on his current account. so yeah, it's, people just are not aware of how bad things really are, and password reuse and the interconnectedness of everything and internet connected TVs and, you know, ovens and whatever, like all of these things all feed into the ecosystem of vulnerability.
Yeah, sure. I know that was, you know, when the big talk for a while there was the Internet of Things. It's one of those, oh, sure, I'm sure there's some good things about it, but it just feels like there was, you know, 100,000 bad things we hadn't even thought of yet from that. So,
yeah.
All right.
Yep.
So I want to switch gears a little bit, but before I do, just to hit on what's going on in Europe with the new regulations here. And do you feel like Europe is doing things correctly? Is the United States going to catch up with this, or is this going to be just two separate worlds as far as this, you know, the data protection and whatnot?
I think, you know, all good deeds go,
no good deeds.
Well, I think the problem is when you're looking at things like GDPR and associated types of legislation, to me, they're very easily broken. And I recognize why it exists, and I'm fully on board with wanting to do the right thing. And I fear that those pieces of legislation are written by people who, frankly, have no idea what's going on the internet at all. And the way the legislation ends up being written ultimately drives things like balkanization, and the unintended consequences pile up extremely fast. For instance, right now, some of the most important types of forensics related to like ongoing analysis of what's going on, like threat actors and botnets that are being built and so on, is actually becoming extremely difficult due to GDPR. Because yes, I can't track good people, but I also can't track bad people. A guy in my position can work around it. It's funny because GDPR exists and data is being harder and harder to come by. But a guy like me, I can still get it. It's just it's not like GDPR actually stops me from having it. It really just makes it harder for people who aren't as good as me, who have this job. I'm not even in that type of role where I have to do that type of forensics, but I do help people who from time to time who are in those types of roles because they can't do it themselves. So I worry very heavily that these types of laws, because they're not universal, they're limited to certain locations. When as soon as GDPR came out, Tronk, which is a horrible name, Chicago Tribune, et cetera, they basically, you know, said, you know, we're not going to allow any traffic from the European Union to hit us because we don't feel like we want to be compliant, and or it's too expensive, and or it doesn't solve any actual business requirements we have, and or we just don't get enough revenue from the European Union. So again, that balkanization, you know, we're creating many isolated pieces of the internet. And the thing is, internet routes around damage. And anytime you put up some sort of wall like that, what'll end up happening is the internet, think of the internet as an actual living organism, because it's actually more efficient for your brain to think about it that way. If an organism needs to reach another piece of the organism for, like, let's call it food, for lack of a better term, it will find a way to get over to it. It's just maybe not as efficient as it would normally be without the damage. And so censorship, which is something that is driven, that is definitely a part, a unintended consequence of balkanization, is definitely damage, and it will eventually get routed around. And so all the things we think we're really protecting from, yeah, there will be some positive change. And I'm not saying there's no upside, but the downside is some of the other things that need to happen from a security perspective and forensics become extremely difficult. And that makes it easier for bad actors to navigate in that type of ecosystem. So I'm not actually very pro GDPR or really any of those types of legislation that have come out, frankly, because they're just very poorly written. I'm not saying that they couldn't be well written, but we're just not there yet.
Okay. All right. I think we're gonna switch things a little bit here, and I'm gonna ask a different type of question. Would you rather everyone thinks that your life sucks, but it's actually awesome, or everyone thinks your life is terrible, but it's actually good?
Well, I'd rather my life be awesome. In fact, if no one knew who I was at all, that would be the most ideal situation. I really don't care what people think about my life. In fact, most people don't even know what I do for a living. And that's by design. I just really don't feel like my personal happiness is tied up in other people's opinion of what my life should be like. I think that's a recent thing in my life, by the way. I think once upon a time, I was actually a pretty miserable person on the inside, but one of those people taking awesome photos all the time, mm-hmm. And I had a pretty massive crash mentally when my consulting business failed, and it failed largely because of the economic crisis, which took a lot of consultant companies out of business, because it turns out very large companies who use us probably won't be using us if they go out of business.
Weird how that happens.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that way. And so I prefer to live my life on my own terms and just be a happy person. And what that really involves, what it really entails, I guess, is just being genuine, not lying to people, not having ulterior motives, basically seeing everybody as not a commodity or something that I can get something from, but just being a nice human being. And that change from what I was before to what I am now has dramatically improved my happiness.
Oh, well, that's always good to hear. Would you rather cut off one of your fingers or pay $50,000 of your own money for the person you hate the most to go on a trip around the world?
I kind of value my fingers. I'd be happy to give them a trip around the world. Maybe they'd be a nicer person.
Would you rather have a car alarm go off every night outside your window, but get to sleep in?
I feel like I've lived that life.
But you could sleep in the place you wanted, or have a peaceful, quiet night's sleep every single night, but have to get up every morning at 3 a.m.
Ooh. I think the car alarm, unfortunately, 3 a.m. is that's a no good. I know. No, negative. No, no.
I like the ones where the more you think about it, the more you're happy with your answer. Okay. Would you rather be immune to hangovers forever or never have to go to the dentist ever again?
I don't really mind the dentist. I don't really get a lot of cavities. I don't eat a lot of sugar, and I take good care of my teeth. And my dentists tend to be fairly attractive women, and so I have no problems. They're kind of nice people, and they're fun to look at. So,
all right. So immune to hangovers is the answer. Okay.
Yeah.
Would you rather be able to speak to animals or be able to read other people's minds?
Oh, definitely read people's minds for sure. 100%. Yeah. No, I mean, I know what my cat's thinking anyway. I don't need to get any deeper in there. It's like five things, like food, water, I want to be picked up. Stop doing what you're doing.
The cat murder, obviously, is the fifth thing. Murder.
Yeah, murder. Yeah, murder is in there too. Yeah, that's in there.
Okay. Now, I wasn't able to really find out much about this online, but our CEO here, Bartosz, has told us that you're very involved in some charity work. and was curious if maybe you'd like to talk a little bit about some of the charity work that you do here for us.
So I'm going to have to assume the one he is referring to is Amazonica, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that what he's referring to? Yeah. So there's a charity barbecue that happens during Oktoberfest every year. It's a really great opportunity to kind of give back to the community. So we've ended up buying Amazonica like entire vehicle. I think we have basically given enough money to buy a small fleet of vans now so they can, you know, deliver food and stuff. Basically what it comes down to is we basically have a barbecue where we have some of the best sort of minds in marketing all show up at the one place at one time. And it's a 1 day thing. So it kind of starts fairly early and then it kind of goes throughout like well into the evening, about to like 8, 9 o'clock. And we have various different, panels for the most part, that, you know, there'll be like 5, 6 people on a panel or whatever, and talking about, you know, different aspects of internet marketing. So one of it will be, you know, growth. One of it will be, link building. One of it will be what's going on in the state of search in general, you know, like with Google in particular. And then my part of it is the Black Hat Shed. And the Black Hat Shed is a place where we can talk about Black Hat SEO and negative SEO. In particular, ways that we can dramatically alter the search engine rankings rather than being good at search, being bad at search. How can we leverage the penalties that Google provides to, you know, do interesting things against the other person in the search engine results that we're trying to rank against? So every year we get together and we do this charity barbecue. It's actually, it raises many thousands and tens of thousands of euros. So we give this big check to them, and it's actually kind of fun because I think everyone wins. You know, the presenters win because, you know, they get to be seen as experts or whatever. The audience gets tons and tons of knowledge that they wouldn't be able to get anywhere else because it's, you know, Chatham House rules, you know, basically anything goes and just don't say I said it kind of thing. The Amazonica makes quite a bit of money for 1 day's worth of, you know, passing the hat around.
All right. And how did you get involved with that to begin with?
It's kind of a long story. So I used to run hackers.org, hackers.org, which was the web application security lab. And we used to get about 20,000 people a day visiting it at its heyday. And during that process, I started writing about how web application security could be used to influence SEO in a positive way. It would be Black Hat SEO, but it would still be a positive as opposed to using it offensively. Specifically cross-site scripting, injecting links into web pages, etc. And so I met this guy named Quadzilla, who was running SEOblackhat.com at the time. I think he probably is still at this point. But we became friends, and he said, hey, I'd like you to come out to Oktoberfest. He actually invited me to a previous one, and I couldn't make it. So I went to the first one I could make it to, which is the second one they've ever had. Back then, it wasn't really, this is SE Oktoberfest. So it's this is the thing that surrounds that charity barbecue. Up to that point, I guess no one had ever actually given a presentation. It had been more like a roundtable. And so I showed up not having any idea what was going on and not really being a marketing person, being a security person. So I had this 2.5 hour long presentation, which I didn't really plan it to be that long, but I also kind of was thinking I might have to do quite a bit of talking because I was the only security person there. So I was not wrong in thinking that, and I'm glad I did bring that super long deck. And by the end of it, people were like, whoa, that was crazy. You know, definitely worth the price of admission. Like absolutely one of the best talks we've ever seen kind of thing. Definitely welcome to come back next year kind of thing. And also, holy crap, we better like start writing a deck because apparently this is a conference. And so everybody was like mad rush to try to create these, you know, very ad hoc, right off the cuff type decks, you know, anything they could do in like a handful of minutes, basically. And so that sort of kicked off the real part of the conference where it actually became a traditional conference where you actually have real presentations. And ever since then, it's been one of those things where it's sort of a battle to see who can have the best presentation. And I'm not a marketer, so I'm sort of in my own, you know, type of, you know, thing or whatever, you know, I'm in my own class or whatever. But everybody else is like, you know, who can get the best, you know, trick to make SEO work better or whatever, who can find the thing that Google's missing or whatever. And it's really, really fun. It's actually, I learned more at that conference than pretty much any other conference I've ever been to.
Oh, wow. That does sound like a lot of fun. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. We're gonna move on one more time to the Elephate Lightning Round. These are gonna be some quick questions. If you would like to elaborate, you can. If not, we're just gonna go right on to the next one.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right. War games or sneakers?
War games.
Wow, it's a good thing Christian is not able to listen right now. He would be upset. All right.
I just loved it. I loved it because it was. I loved that movie because it was. It really got me. I loved the fact that they were doing war dialing. It was just. It was fantastic.
Chris just has a very special part in his heart for sneakers, and I think he's upset right now. He can't chime in. There was a problem with his mic, so we'll just get to leave it at that. Chicago style pizza or New York style pizza?
Probably New York.
Okay, Hanson Brothers, the band or fictional hockey players?
Anything but the band.
Have you seen Slapshot?
I have not. No.
Ah, okay. All right. Then you'll have to check out Slapshot, a Paul Newman movie from the mid late 70s.
I think I'm all right. I think I'm good.
it's a funny movie, but anyway. Boa constrictor or anaconda?
I think arsenic, actually.
Bid or buy it now?
Buy it now. Yeah, definitely. I got things to do.
Count Chocula or Frankenberry?
I like my fruit. I think I'm going to go Frankenberry.
Okay. Politics or sports?
Politics.
Which one?
Geopolitics, I think. Specifically.
Okay. Silver or gold?
To wear silver, to own gold.
Okay. Now these next two questions I'm asking because you live in Austin. Is that correct? You still live in Austin, Texas?
Okay. Yeah,
okay.
Austin, Texas.
All right.
Yeah.
So with bands, the sword or spoon?
Oh, spoon. Yeah.
They're a great band. Dazed and Confused or Office Space?
Office Space a million times over. Oof, that's such a great movie. Although I did see Matthew McConaughey in the elevator the other day.
let's hear a little bit about that. What was Matthew McConaughey doing in the elevator?
He was going up in the elevator.
Did he give you any kind of motivational speech? I just assume that's what he does.
No, it was actually a little confusing because I wasn't actually 100% sure it was him until he spoke, and I'm like, that's Matthew McConaughey, and then I got off the elevator.
Okay, so that's the end of the lightning round. All right, before we go, do you have any final thoughts? Anything that you would like to promote? Anything coming up you'd like to let our listeners know about?
Well, the thing I'm currently working on these days is a company called Bit Discovery. And so basically what our company does is we identify the assets that companies own. So that sounds like it would be a really trivial task, but it is definitely not. And the reason why is companies generally have absolutely no idea what they own after an acquisition, or because marketing teams are off doing whatever marketing teams are doing, or the guy in charge of that project left, or whatever. So once a company gets to a certain size, it's no longer possible to know everything that they own as much as they might try. So we basically built software that effectively has an index of all of the internet, and we do correlation on it, which is one of the reasons why this GDPR thing is very interesting to me. Effectively, our company allows companies to know about what they own, or can help during the M&A process to understand what the company they're about to purchase owns and so on. So bitdiscovery.com if anyone's interested.
All right, terrific. Well, once again, Robert, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun, and again, not the serial killer. I would like to emphasize that.
not that serial killer.
All right,
not that serial killer.
certainly not that one.
You have been listening to Elephate in the Room, hosted by Derek Caraview, produced by Christian A. Dumais, music by Giant Monsters on the Horizon. This podcast is a part of Elephate, the 2018 European Search Awards winner for Best Small SEO Agency. Follow Elephate on Twitter at ElephateSEO and on Facebook at Elephate. Thanks for joining us, and see you next time.